chat. Malcolm Turnbull announced the laws of math do not apply here.
One of my favourite brands of comedy aerial is brown people and black people making fun of white people.
Senators have been dropping like flies recently.
Shouting out the fact that in the Knowles Carter family, women just have one name.
Backchat on FBI Radio.
Hello and welcome to Backchat on FBI Radio, the freshest wrap of news and politics on your airwaves. I'm Ariel Bogle.
And I'm Osman Faruqi.
So this week we're going to be chatting about everyone's favourite bank. You know, the bank you signed up with Dolomites.
Dolomites, man. Those kids, they snuck in. Well, they snuck into schools. They propagandized, told the children.
Yeah.
I signed up.
Yeah.
Did you sign up?
I certainly signed up too. And I still have a bank account with the Commonwealth Bank. But they are, of course, in big trouble. They've been accused of multiple breaches of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing laws.
What? Dolomites financing terrorism?
No.
Allegedly.
Shush. Allegedly. Yes, we're going to get into that and break it all down for you, but first.
First up, we're going to be talking about the government's plan to drug test welfare recipients. It was first announced in the budget in May at the beginning of the year, and the government struggled to get support for the package of legislation through the parliament, but nevertheless, it's persisting. And if you've got any views on what we're talking about on the show at all, including the plan to drug test welfare recipients, you can text us in on 0409 945 945. So this week, the plan was back in the news because the government announced the first locations that it was going to trial the welfare drug testing regime. And the first of those is the Canterbury-Bankstown area in Sydney, and the second one is Logan in Queensland. A couple of areas that have something in common. They're lower income areas. And the plan is to drug test 7,000 people in each of those areas in 2018. And if you're found to have used marijuana, MDMA, or methamphetamine, you're going to have your welfare payments quarantined. But Malcolm Turnbull's got an interesting explanation for why he supports the plan.
The drug test for welfare
drug trials,
recipients.
You know, I talked about love a minute ago.
Yeah.
This has been criticised by some people. This is all about love.
It's all about love.
All about love. But according to doctors and plenty of social workers, this just won't work. It's been trialled in other countries, particularly in America, and abandoned for, you know, a lack of efficacy. It costs a lot of money to drug test people and then run them through these quarantining procedures, but does it actually get people off drugs? That is very much unclear.
Yeah, and you know, I don't necessarily understand the logic of it, and the government hasn't explained why quarantining welfare payments will resolve these issues. So basically what happens is if you're tested and you're found positive, your welfare payments will be quarantined, so you can only access 20% of them as cash.
Yep.
And the other 80% go onto what's called a basics card that can only be spent on food and rent, I think.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's always interesting to see what drugs are being tested for, notably cocaine. What some might call the rich person's drug is not being tested for. And, of course, the test sites are not in the wealthier parts of Sydney. They're in the Canterbury-Brankstown area.
Absolutely. And why that's interesting, like when this story first broke and people said, well, you know, why would the government drug test the eastern suburbs? There aren't that many welfare recipients there. But it's not just people on Newstart and JobSeeker payments that are being tested. It's also people on Youth Allowance. And that's a payment that hundreds of thousands of university students receive, including university students live all over the place,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
But the system and the way that it's being trialled means that if you're a young university student who's receiving youth allowance who lives in the western suburbs of Sydney or in Logan in Queensland, and you smoked a joint maybe and the government busts you and they test you and you're positive, you're now not going to have access to the vast majority of those payments. But if you're racking them up in Double Bay and you're on youth allowance, then you're absolutely fine, which, you know, some, including me, might say is very, very unfair.
You might say that. And of course, the government had another crazy week, what with citizenship laws, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that was quite relevant, I think, to the drug testing rigmarole that's going on was Tony Abbott's confession box with Tony Abbott. So there was a rumor going around back in 2009, right in the midst of the great financial crisis, that Tony Abbott missed a vote on Australia's bailout package because he passed out drunk. Here is Wayne Swan in 2013, who was then Treasurer, accusing Abbott of being drunk, too drunk to vote.
The Leader of the Opposition slept right through the critical vote. He was drunk and didn't come into the House.
Treasurer will withdraw. The Manager of Opposition Business will resume his seat. I was trying very quickly to draw the Treasurer's attention to
what I thought was a very outrageous comment.
Scenes from 2013 Parliament.
Yeah, things, wild times.
Things have not changed. So it turns out that Tony Abbott, well, look, he did pass out drunk.
He did.
And couldn't vote because he admitted as much to Annabelle Crabb in a new show of hers that's coming out on the ABC on Tuesday, The House. He admitted that he was getting drunk, I think, with Kevin, you know, having a little tipple with Kevin Andrews.
Kevin Andrews and Peter Costello, yeah. The former Howard government treasurer.
Yeah, just as Labor, which was then in power, was putting together its package to help, you know, extricate Australia from pretty much the biggest bank dump the world has ever seen.
A huge, huge piece of legislation to bail us out of the GFC.
Yeah. Here's Abbott with Annabelle Crabb.
I think quite a few bottles of wine were consumed by the three of us. So the reflections went on for longer and later than they should have, and the impact was rather greater than it should have been.
He's just laughing about it. Just great times. We're paying for that guy a lot of money to go to Parliament to engage in what's going on and to vote on stuff. And he just got wasted and didn't vote. Oh,
so they
man.
Need little breathalyzers at the door of Parliament.
Absolutely.
So Swan, of course, feels very vindicated about this. Here he was yesterday.
He was so self-indulgent on that night. He missed division after division after division. And since that time, he simply lied about it. He hasn't come clean about it. Why he's chosen to do that now, I don't know. Perhaps he's just completely, utterly and completely lost the plot. It's hard to know.
Wayne Swan is very salty about the whole thing.
I guess Wayne Swan's not in Parliament anymore, so he can feel free.
No, he is. He's still in Parliament.
Is he?
Yeah. You forget. You think that he's moved on, but he's still kicking around.
He's just chilling
just chilling on the back bench.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a very ironic week for Abbott to make this confession because, of course, the government wants to drug test welfare recipients and, you know, if they fail those tests, they could have their benefits quarantined. But it turns out you can be a parliamentarian and be too drunk to vote on significant bills and no worries, man.
I'm steamed up about this. I'm incredibly steamed. Like, as you said, let's leave aside the welfare thing for a second. He's a politician. He's in Parliament during a sitting week.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting drunk instead of doing his job.
Yeah.
And then he's not even voting on... So he's not even in the chamber when, like... You can say that it didn't change the outcome. If it doesn't change the outcome, then, like, let's sack 90% of our politicians and just have the Prime Minister and the opposition leader just vote on things and decide what happens. You know, he earns more than $200,000 a year to go to Parliament and to vote on stuff. And he didn't do it. Now he's just joking about it. But as you said... In the context of the welfare stuff, people that are receiving minuscule amounts of money who might have drug problems are getting booted off. Well, this guy can joke about it. I'm steamed up, man. It's Saturday morning and my heart is racing.
It is weird. And I think, you know, reflects something quite odd sometimes about Australian society that we can get very moralistic and, you know, shake our fists about drugs. But alcohol is, you know, statistically, I mean, the real problem and something that's not often talked about or tackled, and obviously the Australian Parliament is no exception.
Absolutely. I think the other thing about this story that's interesting and why it's back in the news this week, the government dropped an exclusive to the Daily Telegraph about its plan to drug test these welfare recipients in Canterbury Bankstown area, but it hasn't passed legislation to do that, and in fact it looks like they probably won't be able to do that. Labor and the Greens have come out and opposed it. The crossbench has got mixed views at best. Jackie Lambie said that she's only going to support the bill if politicians agree to be drug tested themselves.
Ayo.
Which is a pretty baller move, I reckon. Like, she's saying, why should there be one rule for welfare recipients and another one for MPs?
Good point, Jackie.
But, yeah, good point, Jackie. But despite the fact that they haven't gotten it through Parliament, they want to get it in the media. And I think, as you said, Ariel, like, the citizenship drama was just taking up all this oxygen. And now they want everyone to focus on familiar territory, I guess, which is going after dole bludgers.
Yeah, absolutely. So stay tuned because we're about to dive into just what's going on at the Commonwealth Bank. And if you are a customer, you might want to stick around and listen because, well, you know, I'm a customer.
I'm a customer.
I want to know what
I'm
the
sticking
hell
around to
is
listen.
Going on. Stay tuned. And we're going to be talking about the Commonwealth Bank, which is in big, big trouble at the moment because of a case that was filed by AUSTRAC. So AUSTRAC is Australia's financial intelligence and regulatory agency, and they have accused the Commonwealth Bank of serious and systematic breaches of anti-money laundering and terrorism financing laws. This all hinges on these machines the Commonwealth Bank had called intelligent deposit machines, and they failed to comply with the law on more than 53,000 occasions. And they're now facing a potentially huge class action lawsuit as well. So Michael Yander, ABC's senior digital business reporter, is in the studio to help us break this down. Welcome.
Morning.
So walk us through, how did these machines, these sort of smart ATMs, I suppose, assist in money laundering?
Okay, well, fundamentally, it means you don't have to go into a branch and deal with people. So if you're, say, a drug syndicate, which is some of the cases that AUSTRAC named in their statement of claim to the federal court, so there were some drug importers, including some who've already been convicted related to this, you know, you get your money from your drug deals. You don't really want to front up to the branch with, you know, say a few $100,000. So what people were doing was going around to like a dozen different CBA intelligent deposit machines and putting in several thousand dollars here and several thousand dollars there. And it meant they didn't have to deal with branch staff, and they were trying to do it in a way that the bank wouldn't notice that, you know, they were basically laundering all this drug money through it.
And so was the bank supposed to have processes to detect what was going on in these situations? And if so, how did they fall down?
Yeah, so they're required to under the law. This is the main law that AUSTRAC maintains, is this anti-money laundering and terrorism financing legislation. And what it means, one of the key parts of that is every deposit of $10,000 or more is called a threshold transaction, and the bank has to report those. Now, CBA, unlike the other three major banks, set effectively a $20,000 limit on these so-called intelligent deposit machines.
Just under their own steam, or like for their own reasons?
Who knows why, how that internal decision was made, because all the other major banks, and ANZ's even come out and said it, their CEO said, well, we set, I think they've got about a $4,000 or $5,000 limit, deliberately to make sure it was well under the $10,000 threshold.
Sounds like a sensible move.
Now, when CBA bought in these machines, and this is their response to the case, basically they had an automatic reporting mechanism. Any transaction $10,000 or over would get, you know, an electronic report would be submitted. But then they had a glitch with the machines unrelated to this. And when they fixed that glitch, apparently it turned off the automatic reporting. But the real kicker is that CBA didn't notice this for almost 3 years and only noticed it when the federal police kept coming to them saying, we know some guys that we've been investigating for drug importation have been putting money into your accounts. What's going on? Yeah. Why haven't you told us about these transactions?
Quite incredible. And so what kind of fines or punishments is Commonwealth Bank potentially facing?
Well, theoretically, so the legal penalty for this is a maximum of $18 million per offence. And as you said, there were more than 53,000 breaches of this reporting law. Yeah. So you work it out, it's a bit of maths, but it's about $966 billion, which is
not far off our
roughly,
GDP, right?
Yeah, it's about half our GDP and about seven times what the Commonwealth Bank is worth on the share market.
Right.
So, but the reality is, look, they won't cop that degree of penalty. What CBA is clearly trying to argue, they haven't put out their defence yet, but what they're trying to argue is it was one software coding mistake and effectively, therefore, one breach rather than more than 53,000. So they're trying to get away with an $18 million fine. Probably it'll be somewhere in between where AUSTRAC and CBA come to a negotiated settlement. Now, gambling company Tabcorp got done for very similar offences. Obviously, different mechanism, but basically people were putting, you know, illicit money through their casinos, and they copped a $45 million settlement.
So when we're talking about those 53,000 transactions or potential infringements, is that 53,000, you know, alleged drug smugglers and potential terrorists who are using those, like, they're depositing it 53,000 times?
Yeah, no, this is just 53,500 and something transactions over $10,000 that should have been reported. Now, many of them might have been ordinary businesses and really legitimate. But that said, there were, definitely hundreds, if not thousands, of deposits that were illicit and have been related to federal police investigations. So there's a few good case studies that the federal police gave us. One was a $21 million deposited by a syndicate, almost all of it sent offshore. Two people have already been convicted over the money laundering there. And even after identifying the suspicions and telling the CBA that they were investigating this group, the CBA left the accounts open, and allegedly another $9 million of $21 million was sent off to Hong Kong, which means then the federal police can't, freeze it, or the criminal proceeds go offshore. And there's plenty more examples. Drug dealers who put more than $6 million through in another syndicate. We had $27 million going through and almost all of it sent offshore. And that was through branch deposits as well as these ATMs. So it's not just the ATM screw-up that AUSTRAC is really concerned about. There were basically, there was a whole failure in the CBA to have enough staff on in this particular unit to monitor these suspicious transactions and actually tell the federal police and AUSTRAC when suspicions were raised.
Right. So as you said, the fines probably won't be half our GDP, but they could be quite significant. I guess Commonwealth Bank is in the too big to fail category for Australia. There's no way the government would let fines be levelled that would actually disrupt the bank's function, do you think? Or do you think that they might want to try and make a quite a big example of a Commonwealth Bank, given there's been a lot of sort of anger from the public towards the banks recently, the sort of agitation by Labor for a federal inquiry into the banks?
Well, look, really the government has nothing to do with it. It's now up to the federal court and AUSTRAC. Now, the government does, you know, effectively run AUSTRAC, but it's an independent agency. Sure. And they will want to send a strong message because all their public statements about this have been how bad this behaviour by CBA was. They've also said the other three major banks are relatively in the clear on this. They've looked at them and their smart deposit machines haven't had these problems. So I'm suspecting it will be a fine in the hundreds of millions, perhaps even up to $1 billion. We've seen like HSBC in the United States got fined a couple of billion US dollars over money laundering. That was probably even more deliberate and systemic. This looks like a stuff up rather. Like CBA didn't actually make a lot of money off these transactions. Right. They're going to lose way more in fines than they made off the transaction fees. But it does look like they've just slashed their compliance unit because compliance is a cost. Mm, it costs you staff wages, but it doesn't make any money. What AUSTRAC wants to do here is say, well, compliance may be a cost, but if you don't do it properly, the cost that we're going to impose on you will be so much bigger that all the banks are going to make sure they don't do this again. So I think it'll be hundreds of millions, maybe around $1 billion. That wouldn't surprise me as a result.
And so it's, I want to pick up on that point about what message might be sent to the other banks, because if you take the Commonwealth's line on this, it was just like a small error. They're trying to do the right thing, but this was a coding problem. But do you think that there are more systemic issues across the industry that is what is leading to these sorts of incidents happening, whether it's cutting compliance or just like overlooking basic issues?
Well, I think it all comes down to profit culture. You've got shareholders who demand, like the way our economy is set up at the moment and the financial system, shareholders demand returns. Like, you know, even with record low interest rates, they want returns of 8% plus a year. Now, to deliver those kind of profit returns and growth, companies, you know, have to cut costs and they have to try and boost revenues everywhere they can. Now, our banks have tried going overseas and that hasn't generally been very successful because they've had to actually compete, unlike here, where they have a pretty captive market. Like 80% of the market is with the big four banks, basically. And so they're focused back domestically, but you run out of revenue sources because, like, everyone's got a bank account.
Everyone's
got a bank account. Lots of people have home loans. House prices are already ridiculously high. Australia's got the second highest mortgage debts in the world, so we can't actually borrow that much.
They've already got all of our money.
So it's, you know, then it becomes about cost cutting to meet your profit targets, because if you can't grow the revenue as fast as you used to, you've got to look to cut the costs. So they do automation, but in this case, when the automation stuffs up, you need the checks and balances and the compliance officers, but they cost money, so you've got rid of them. And interestingly, CBA, after this all broke, their chairperson, Catherine Livingston, said that they've put on 50 risk and compliance officers. Well, to me, that suggests that they had 50 too few in the first place. And so this is the whole culture. It's like, how do you boost profit? How do you cut costs? And when you do that, things go wrong. And not just in this area. Boosting profit means giving mortgages, as we saw on Four Corners last week. Mm. You're giving mortgages to people who patently can't afford them, like someone who's in their 60s about to retire, and you give them a $435,000 mortgage.
And, I mean, it is certainly working for them, right? When it comes to profit, they're raking it in.
Yeah, well, when we talk about hundreds of millions of dollars or $1 billion fine for CBA, if that's what the outcome is, I mean, they can afford it. They made $9.9 billion last financial year.
Wow.
So it's a big hit. $1 billion would be a big hit in their profits. But, you know, in the scheme of things, it's not going to break the bank.
So last question on this just had people come up to me this week and tell me to move my money out of the Commonwealth Bank and, you know, into, say, NAB or St. George. Do you think we're at that level? I mean, I don't think Commonwealth Bank's about to collapse over this, or...
No, I doubt they would. And as you said, the government, you know, I mean, right. deposits under 250 grand are guaranteed anyway under the federal government scheme. So, you know, in terms of people with deposits, that's all pretty safe with these, you know, big institutions. And to be honest, even though they've got the all clear on money laundering, I don't think NAB or Westpac or ANZ are really that different. It was ANZ that gave the loan to the person about to retire for 435 grand. I've seen cases of Westpac doing the same sort of thing, and I'm sure NAB does as well. It's about this profit culture. I mean, if people are really concerned about the major banks, there are not-for-profit banking alternatives like, you know, credit unions and building societies and mutual banks, you know, which offer an alternative, but not many people take them up.
All right. Thanks, Michael. You can stick around with us for Backchat Roulette. Can't get over that.
I love it. Sounds. I love the air horn every week. It makes me love Saturdays.
So this is a new segment we're trying out where we talk about some stories that people might have missed this week but are worthy of our attention. So what you got?
Look, this story, the overall story here, no one would have missed. Taylor Swift dropped her first single in a long time. Her first album in 3 years is about to come out in November. It's called Reputation. It got the whole internet talking. It was basically a diss track. And at Kanye West, there's been this beef that Taylor and Kanye have had since 2009, going back to the VMAs when he interrupted her. It's all kind of a bit, I think, hackneyed. It's been around for a very long time, and I think a lot of people are getting over it. But the bit of it that has got the internet shook in particular, including me, the date that Taylor Swift's new album releases is November 10th this mm-hmm. year. That's the 10-year anniversary of the death of Kanye's mum, Donda West. And if you know anything about Kanye, you know that he loves his mum.
Yes,
he created Donda. A design agency after his mum. His amazing album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, was originally going to be called Donda. And last year, when he had a bit of a mental health episode, that was apparently, according to reports, sparked by the anniversary of his mother's death. So it's an important moment for him. And given the feud and given the fact that she's come back with a single aimed at Kanye and his wife, Kim Kardashian West, people are saying that it's deliberate, that she's deliberately designed her comeback to be on the day of his mother's death anniversary.
That seems just a little too brutal.
You think it's too much?
I don't know. I mean, there's a great article I recommend people read on Junkie of Osman Faruqi fame about why it's important that Taylor Swift denounce Donald Trump. Mm. And actually made some really good arguments. And, you know, yeah, I don't know. Taylor Swift does have an Aryan princess vibe. I'll just put it out there. But I still don't think she'd be quite cruel enough to choose her album date for the anniversary.
To be honest, yeah, I agree. I don't think she would do that. But it has got a lot of people talking and a lot of people that don't like her happy to have another reason to throw hate on her.
Absolutely. This is not the last time I'm sure we'll discuss Taylor Swift on Backchat.
Awesome. Good to hear.
Michael, what you got?
Well, it's sort of related to what we're just talking about with the banks and that Four Corners on Monday, which I think touched on a lot of important issues. Mm. But
it's on iView. It's definitely worth checking out if you guys haven't. Yeah,
and especially for, you know, our kind of generation and younger, the biggest problem at the moment is considering what you're going to do when you do want to buy a home. You know, once you get to your 30s and you're like, oh, I should think about getting a home, and you look at the prices in Sydney in particular and you go, well, there's no way. And part of the reason for that is about these loans and loan sizes. And, you know, one of the telling things in that story was this mortgage broker saying, well, it used to be that banks would lend you 3 or 4 times your household income, like before tax. Hmm. And now they'll happily lend you 8 or 9. And one of the case studies in the Four Corners was roughly about 10 times their income,
yeah.
although they had rental investment properties as well. So what I really want to know, and what I think is the sleeper story here, is if anyone has access to the bank mortgage lending guidelines, if you work at a bank,
pass it on.
And of course that is very risky for you because you'd get the sack if they found out. So I'd suggest you post them, and the ABC postal address is very easy. So you can send them to me, care of ABC News, GPO Box 9994, Sydney 2001. It's Don Bradman's average. That's the GPO.
Is that where the GPO number comes from?
That's why we're 9994, 99. 99.94 was fantastic. Redmond's average.
We definitely want you guys to do that. So any Commonwealth Bank employees out there?
Well, any bank employees, right?
This is called whistleblowing. It's a public service. Please do it. So my story, I'll just wrap up quickly, is about the Samsung Air. So over in South Korea this week, the heir to the Samsung empire, Lee Jae-yong, was found guilty on charges of bribery and embezzlement, among other crimes. And this is just a fascinating story. I recommend people read up. It's also involved the former president of South Korea, President Park. She was impeached in March and is herself separately on trial. There was like sort of what's the Russian guy that, you know...
Oh, Rasputin.
Rasputin. There was like a Rasputin figure. It's a great story. Everybody should get involved in this South Korean corruption conspiracy theory.
South Korean corruption.
It's fascinating. That's all we have time for this week, unfortunately. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
You're welcome.
And thanks also to Sam and Oscar, who helped us put on this show.
And if you want to be the next Sam and Oscar, our producers, you totally can. The time is right. We're looking for a new social media producer and a digital producer. So come join the family. You can find the details on FBI's website, fbiradio.com, or on Backchat's Facebook page. We'd love to have you involved in making this very fun, very informative show.